Pratolini's Hardware and Garden Stores brings your garage...
Take it from the top.
Pratolini's Hardware and Garden Stores brings you Garage Logic Podcast number 1286, April 12th, 2024. 88 degrees on this day last year. I don't recall that.
I do remember that.
It was beautiful.
Got rid of all the snow we got probably over April Fool's Day.
At 12 degrees in 1962 on this day, and on this day in 2020, almost 7 inches of snow. We're not worried about snow right now. The weekend weather forecast. I bet you some kids will try swimming this weekend. I would not advise it. The water's still cold, but if you want a lake home or a swimming hole on your property, get a hold of the people at Aquaside, a White Bear Lake company that's been keeping lake shores free of weeds and algae for more than 60 years with a complete line of lake and pond control products that will take care of everything. Aquaside products are easy to use, they work quickly, and they're registered with the EPA and DNR, so the fish are safe, so is Little Billy. Don't let the weeds overtake your lake.
Little Billy.
Call Aquaside today and describe your problem. They'll get you the correct products. Call Aquaside at 1-800-328-9350 or go to aquaside.com, and it's Aquaside that brings us the ice outs. And as you get near mid-April, the ice outs are plentiful. Minnetonka went out on this day, April 12th, in 1908, 1927, 1943, 1954, 1955, and 2003. White Bear Lake went out on this day in 1949, 1959, and 1985.
You getting all this, Sean?
Indeed.
Hail the Flashlight King!
Hail you!
And now, from the mayor's office above the boathouse on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Chris Reavers manning Technology Corner, Kenny Olson from the Krabby Coffee Shop, John Height in the newsroom, and of course, the rookie. Here is your Flashlight King, Fireworks Commissioner, and the Keeper of Common Sense, your mayor, Joe Soucheray.
Yesterday we did part one. I became fascinated with a woman named Zayab Mohammed who won her first ever attempt to win an office to represent District, is it 63?
Yes.
District 63 in South Minneapolis. She's a state senator. She won 85.8% of the vote. She won 39,063 votes. And a guy named Sean Holster won 6,449 votes. 14.2%. Sean Holster is with us. Who are you?
I am currently the chair of the Minneapolis GOP, which up until 1 year ago on the 25th did not exist, the Minneapolis organizational unit. Previous to that, I ran against Zainab back in 2022.
Right.
And previous to that, woodworker, cabinet maker, finished carpenter, handyman.
Right. Born in St. Paul.
Yep.
Briefly. But then moved to New Orleans.
Moved to the entirety of the continental United States, traveling with my family, building factories.
Okay.
Wow. Yep.
And your biological dad, who you didn't meet, was a roadie for Cheap Trick.
Yes.
I'll be damned.
Yep. A year or two before they became Cheap Trick.
So he didn't go to Live at Budokan with him in Japan.
No.
So he was working with Norm Coleman, huh? Oh, no, that was 10 years after.
Sean, yes. And you live in South Minneapolis.
South Minneapolis, Nokomis.
Do you have a family?
Just a wife.
Okay.
Just a wife.
How old are you?
I am 54 years old.
54, and was this your first attempt to win a political office?
Yes.
And why did you take that upon yourself?
Because nobody else was willing, ready, or able to do it, and I saw who the opponent was, and about a week before the filing deadline was coming up, filed, because nobody else was going to do it, so I should.
You might as well, this is no slight against you. This turns out to be true of all the precincts in Minneapolis. They were overwhelmingly won by DFLers, but you might as well have been invisible.
Oh, absolutely.
Why? What is going on? That's why you're here for part two today.
Why did she get
39,000 votes?
Name recognition, organizational affiliations, and being very well tapped into the DFL. She was the hand-picked successor of Patricia Torres-Rae. via Keith Ellison, via her communications directorship with CARE Minnesota, Council of Arab or American Islamic Relations. Aida Leeds is another organization she was very heavily involved with. It's a lot of digging. It's a lot of it sounds conspiratorial, but
I would imagine much of it's not conspiratorial.
No, it's not. I can show it all on paper.
Right.
She was very, very well tied in with the activist class. The big problem historically is that Minneapolis has become an activist training ground and playground to build the DFL bench here in Minnesota, but also it's a national thing.
You said she had name recognition. How could that be? No one's ever heard of her.
Yes, they have in the activist community. She was very much an advocate for Black Lives Matter. I listened to yesterday's podcast. You had mentioned in a face mask and everything else.
Right.
That was directly preceding the George Floyd riots, or either just before or just after. She was a vocal advocate and self-proclaimed participant as boots on the ground in that whole nightmare of a week.
Why was she selected by her betters? What did they see in her? In other words, she was recruited.
She is the sister-in-law of another state senator over in 62, Omar Fateh.
So it's a family business.
It is. Very classically so. It's a family business. And
Omar Fateh, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't his wife one that was named in the food fraud?
Yeah, and then there's a residence down on Bloomington Avenue where it was a co-residence of her and affiliates of her brother-in-law or her brother-in-law. It's very, very hard to track down because of spelling, believe
it
or not.
Right.
But anyway, this is all confirmed. And at the time, the same residence as the one gentleman who was convicted for two counts of perjury, not elections fraud, but perjury, related to questions of voter fraud in 2022. 2020 or 2022. So the years are a little slippery on me, but if somebody's in front of a computer, you can fact check me.
What intrigued me yesterday and then now discovering that virtually every district in Minneapolis is represented, well, not virtually, they are all represented by
every last one.
DFL, all of whom won handily over their opponents.
Yep.
And what intrigued me about Zayab Muhammad is that just based on what I can read about her, she absolutely does not share any remote vision of this country that I would share. Was that a fair statement?
Yeah, she's an open socialist. She's part of the Democrat Socialists of America, along with a number of other House members and a growing majority, almost full majority, of the Minneapolis City Council.
Kenny?
So, Sean, yesterday I speculated that there was something going on behind the scenes with the Democratic Party asking Patricia Torres-Ray to step down so that Zainab could replace her. Is that, in fact, true? And then the follow-up question, is that because they're pursuing a all-out socialist agenda for Minneapolis?
That is my feeling, and I can't say without risking libel. You know, I have to be somewhat careful in my phraseology.
I think you should.
Is that, yes, and there was precedent going back to 2016. In my analysis of what the hell happened in Minneapolis and in the broader region of Congressional District 5, how did this happen, when and where? And it started in 2016 when Ilhan Omar won her first race against Phyllis Kahn.
Right.
Right? That was the proof of concept election.
Okay.
Right? And that's where you see in both the City Council and the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate a slow turnover, handover of the DFL to the Democrat Socialists of America, we are dealing with today.
What did you intend to bring to the legislature?
I knew I didn't have a shot, so I wanted to find out what can we do about this going forward. Mm-hmm. So I kept my eyes open, my ears open and my mouth shut and started traveling around political circles.
Okay.
Because running as a state Senate candidate, you have a little more access than your average schmuck on the street.
All right. All right.
So start taking notes. It's a long game. It's not, there's no silver bullets.
What is their end game?
What, complete socialist takeover control. Have you noticed how transportation is being shutting down for bike lanes? They're seriously talking about cutting off I-94.
That won't happen. It's a federal highway. They're going to have a lot of trouble. But yes, they wish for that.
They do wish for that. The homeless problem right now, that's actually a tool that they're using.
In what way?
Well, in a manner of managed decline. Have you heard of managed decline?
You're informing us of it right now.
It's a concept. I believe it was tried out in Boston. Okay, everything's going to go to hell. So manage it in the most manageable way.
What's in it for them to lord over a destroyed city? What's in it for them to lord over a socialist takeover? What's in it for them? Their power?
Government funding. Social services dollars.
Well, who's going to keep working to provide them the money?
Good question. Just shift that outward to the federal level. Look for the federal funding through Department of Human Services, Housing Department, Medicaid dollars, Medicare dollars. That's why you're seeing an uptick in drug and alcohol treatment and
opioid, fentanyl,
harm reduction. Do you hear the term harm reduction? Mm-hmm. You know, the clean needle programs, stuff like that. That is, in my mind, that is going to be the next Feeding Our Future scandal.
But if they put the owner of the Acme Nut and Bolt Factory out of business or attempt to make his regulatory burden so significant, he'll go out of business and their money's going to dry up.
Right. Well, then now you also have a six-story, you know, 5-over-1 housing boom, development boom, right? Mm-hmm. I see it right along Hiawatha Avenue, right in my neighborhood, and right in the third precinct. You see them going up everywhere. Well, that's 20% subsidized housing for all of those units, right? Then you also have a drop in property values, right? So there you have housing development, housing, federal housing dollars. And how do you pay for this? Well, federalizing it, like the Affordable Care Act. I mean, they're strategic models. They all sound unrelated. And taken by themselves, yeah, they are unrelated, but it's a finance model, a business model to then, okay, that increases your density. Okay, we have a border problem right now as well. Okay, how many more years until the census? Then you have gerrymandering and redistricting, right? And
before we get to what can be done about it, before we get to what you discovered in your noodling around, one of the other things that intrigued us yesterday was Zayab's quote about the Republicans merely wondering if they discover someone living in their property, they want a faster means of getting rid of that person. And the Democrats blocked that request, even though it's on law now that you can use force, apparently, to get somebody out of your house if you have to, the Castle Doctrine. But her quote was, well, she wouldn't go along with that, and her quote was something to the effect that just because you don't have the documentation, you're not less human than the person owning the house. And that set off alarm bells in my mind that her view of America doesn't exist. My view of America is you have to work to get the money to put a down payment on a house, then you have to maintain it and earn it and provide for your family. And she's just saying, well, anybody should be able to own that house or anybody should be able to live there. And I was just wondering if that's part of the long game, too.
Absolutely. Weaponized benevolence. being more compassionate than thou. I'm old enough to remember that, yes, squatters, you had some violence coming at you as I'm removing you from my property. It's on a leadership level, her betters, her graders, her handlers, right? They know better, right? They remember a time that, yeah, that's what happened. So the DFL, they're great at looking compassionate, like they care more. They care about children. They care about women. They care about everybody but themselves, right?
Minorities.
So, yeah, minorities. BIPOC, if you will. Mm-hmm. So they're weaponizing their compassion. When you try to resist that, you are a monster because you just don't care.
You're Islamophobic
now,
or whatever.
You look at someone her age, right? She's what, 24? 25?
I think she's 26.
26, yeah, right in there.
Yeah.
I don't think there is a single malicious bone in her body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she knows any better. I don't think this young generation of socialists know any better.
That's a good point.
I do not slight them for any ill motive. It's mm-hmm. They've never been shown any other way. They've never been taught any other way. This is the vision of utopia that they've been raised with.
You said you knew you didn't have a chance.
Yep.
There were some districts where a Republican didn't even run.
And that was another one of our problems.
And this would have happened had you not filed, right?
Yeah. Wow. We would have been another empty seat, another empty race.
And you said you were beginning to wonder, what can we do to get ahead of this or to at least catch up to it?
Right.
Is there anything that can be done?
Yes. Yes, there is. But there are no easy answers. It's not a one and done deal. It is a matter of... And this was what was helpful in the reorganization, pulling organizationally five state Senate districts together mm-hmm. under one unified organizational structure, whereas before we had five chairs, five treasurers, five secretaries, five voting bodies, and democracy is excruciatingly painful due to Robert's Rules of Order, right? And so you can't do anything under that structure. Consolidate. We had a city unit as well. We've started looking at this as a mergers and acquisitions operation.
Mm-hmm.
So we merged five Senate districts, took 10 years of altering and lobbying to change the state party constitution to allow that to happen. It finally did. So now the first step was stand in the middle of the blast zone because there's nothing here, standing in a bomb crater right mm-hmm. now politically. Use some field expedience. Look around. What do we need to do? Well, first we need to dig a hole and build a foundation, right? Then we need to start putting some framing on top of that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
For this last year, this has been an exercise in that. Well, we need money. We need data. We need participation.
How could 39,000, many of those 39,000 people in voting for her either didn't know what they were doing, or they're purposely voting against their own self-interest?
They vote based on party affiliation without any time.
They saw the DFL there,
yep,
and
that's all they need. That's all they need. And that varies, I will also claim, from precinct to precinct to precinct. There's 137 precincts within 13 wards, within five Senate districts, 10 House districts in the city of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, step one, break out the slide rule in the graph paper and see what we're looking at geographically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who are currently in those seats? Where did they come from? How did they get there? Okay, so the first year is research, and what are our deficits? Well, our deficits started truly in 2016. Previous to 2016, there was a semblance of an organizational structure, but over the course of time, through deferred maintenance, through apathy, and eventually through an inability of legacy, of having a product that could be handed down politically,
mm-hmm.
that completely disappeared. The pattern was, if we can get somebody to run, right? It's a run in name only. So you get your name on the ballot, you call around to enough people in the state of Minnesota to contribute $50 to your campaign because of the PCR,
mm-hmm.
public subsidy return, that $5 check mark on your IRS form every year.
Right.
You know, don't like it. Personally, I don't like it, but it's there, so we're going to use it. So that then allowed that race to take $3,000 on the House level in public funding away from the DFL,
okay.
just to be bogglers and annoying and to throw sand in the Vaseline.
We're speaking with Sean Holster, and we'll be back in a moment. But for the past few weeks, I've been telling you about Renewal by Anderson and their Acclaim replacement windows, which are engineered and manufactured right here. Renewal by Anderson's the best. You all know that. You've probably got Renewal by Anderson windows in your home. They're a J.D. Power Award winner. the highest customer satisfaction among window and patio door manufacturers 4 years in a row, the most five-star reviews. You can go to their website and verify all that. They're trustworthy, respectful, caring, and delightful. And I know this because I know everybody has Renewal by Anderson windows, and not just windows, but patio doors and entry doors. Renewal by Anderson has the best products and the best service. Learn more at renewalbyanderson.com/garagelogic or call Renewal by Anderson at 651-705-6931.
The Earth is not your mother. The Joe Soucheray Show.
Ken Barlow of 5 Eyewitness News. His forecast calls for the upper 70s tomorrow. Don't even try to tell me that summer isn't coming early. That means the crabgrass, the weeds, everything coming early. We're also already hearing lawnmowers around the metro. Those are likely the cylinders of GLers that know that if you want the best lawn on the block, you've got to go with the official lawn care company of Garage Logic, ProfessionalTurf.com. They've been sending out experienced service techs for the last, I'm going to say, month now, assessing lawns and customizing slow-release fertilizer and weed control plans. Environmentally safe, but more importantly, guaranteed for superior results. That beautiful lawn, healthy, thick, lush. That means no crabgrass, no dandelions, no broadleaf weeds. And it all starts with a simple click over to ProfessionalTurf.com where you schedule a free in-person estimate. And while you're on that website, be sure to float around a little bit. Go deep in the tabs. Check out their most recent landscape projects. You'll be pretty amazed. We're talking lawn care, landscape, and a pretty fine irrigation service. You can check it out. Get that free estimate, ProfessionalTurf.com.
We're speaking with Sean Holster, who ran for state senate against Zainab Muhammad, who received 85.6% of the vote, only for us to discover that in the seven districts from 59 through 5, DFL candidates won them all, and they all with over 80% of the vote. And you say there's a way to combat this. It's going to take a lot of time, but I'm not optimistic. You have statistics.
I do, because that's part of my job as
chair of the Minneapolis GOP.
Right, which also places me on the full committee of Congressional District 5.
Okay.
Which also I find myself in a position where I am the grassroots engagement director for the Dalia Al-Akhidi campaign.
All right.
I'm a staffer there. It's my job to find volunteers and find the numerical reason to go up against Ilhan Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Dalia is as of yet not endorsed. That's an endorsing convention at the end of this month,
mm-hmm.
but she has no competition. Is to look at all of the maps, all of the geography, and start crunching some numbers. Now, I've got some numbers here that pertain strictly to Minneapolis and the five Senate districts,
all
which
right.
is 55% of Congressional District 5.
All right.
So, out of a total population of 429,954, right, minus the 19.1% that are under 18, that leaves us with 347,833 eligible voters over the age of 18.
All right.
Now, of those, only 245,199 are registered to vote.
Okay.
That gives you a difference of 102,634. Now, there, as a volunteer organizer, community organizer, if you will, that gives us a target pool of 102,634 for a voter registration drive, a reason to start knocking on their doors.
Right.
Right? Figure out who they are. Now, how we do that, I'd like to put out a few more numbers first. Now, in the 2022 election, general election, one of the big ones, right?
Yep.
We had governor's race, we had constitutional offices to go after. Total vote count, total votes in the city of Minneapolis, 178,848, right?
Yep.
So that leaves you with 66,351 who are registered and didn't vote. right? Now, you look at that race on that map, and okay, why didn't those 66,000, give or take, voters vote for a Republican? We had no candidates for
state. There wasn't
one. Yeah, in most cases. I think there were two, three of us who decided to run for state Senate, and and I was actually one of the high performers in that one, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to Senate District 62. You know, I got almost three times the number of votes as that guy, right?
Oh, God.
And in a lot of the House races, we had no one because since 2016, they've fallen because for whatever the reason. Now, that leaves us with a total of 168,985 individuals inside of the city of Minneapolis that are able to vote and just don't. Those are our wider targets. Yep. Now, that is that 168,985, that is just about 10,000 less than actually voted in total in the city of Minneapolis in a high turnout election.
Mm-hmm.
So now you start crunching the numbers. Math wizards can take their slide rules from here. Knock that down on a precinct level and look at the percentage turnout. How do we get that turnout higher? And how do we give conservatives, Republicans, independents, and the DFL, old school DFLers, we need to give them something to vote for. We need to find out who they are, and we need to directly appeal to them in person, not on a computer screen.
Will that be easier with the presidential election?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be easier with a presidential election in one way. I'm actually really not looking at the presidential end of the ticket. I know it has its positives. It has its negatives. I don't think it's as negative as perceived even in the city of Minneapolis at this point because of economic conditions and basic decay of social order and public safety. My job is to then fill the rest of the down ballot with at least with some qualified candidates that can accept the fact that they are still probably going to lose this cycle, but then that are willing to run again, because that allows, that gives me an opportunity to have a, in this case, no Senate candidates, but House candidates in as many districts as I can throughout CD5, because then we have two down ticket candidates, one congressional candidate on the federal level, and then as many as we can possibly run on the state level, and hopefully. Yeah, that gives us multiple reasons, and county commissioner races and school board races, if we can find those candidates, gives us multiple reasons to strictly target and heavily put time into those districts, those wards, and those precincts.
You said something very charitable at the very outset, but also, the more I think about it, extraordinarily disturbing, and that is you hold no malice whatsoever for Zayed Mohammed.
None.
You're saying that these young people have zero other ways to look at the world. This is what they think.
This is how they were raised.
This
is what they think.
They
are true believers. That they've never known any other option.
Puppets,
and more than that. Okay, look at the average 19-year-old coming out of Minneapolis public schools. Right, we know the education standards have fallen through the bottom. I look at it on a practical end. I can't count how many kids I look at today that don't know how to read a tape measure.
Right.
Right. That's basically why are we graduating kids who haven't learned to read a ruler? Right. That is a display of the mindset of ignorance, not apathy, not stupidity. They've just never been shown how to do things in a correct way, in a self-sustaining way.
You've worked though for a living.
Yeah.
You've had to fill out a time card. You've had to report for duty. You've had to be disciplined.
I've had to fill out payroll. I've been an independent
operator. Young Zayed has never had to do that.
No.
And I would think many of them have never had to do that.
No.
They've never experienced anything but what we're seeing. And so the ideas they take to the legislature are perfectly natural to them and appalling to many of us. Not that they're appalling people. You're really enlightening me here. This is all they know.
That's it.
They don't know capitalism.
Nope.
They don't know entrepreneurship. They don't know the sacredness of private property ownership.
Nope.
And Joe,
you
combine that with voters that strictly vote the ticket and don't even do simple research, you've got a recipe for victory.
Right.
Well, and also look at the issues that they run on or highlight. Renters' rights.
Yes.
Climate change.
Public transit. Well, more practically, public transportation.
Right.
Drug abuse treatment and whatnot. Okay, dovetail that
in. Co-ops for grocery stores.
Co-ops for grocery stores, all of that. Public 15-minute cities.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, but okay, don't bother trying to tell them that nightmare on Cedar Riverside, that was actually built by an architect named Ralph Rapson.
Yeah, I know that name, sure.
Yep, and until the day he died, he kept an office right across from there thinking that was going to be utopia. You know, that was partially completed. That is that's the earliest model of a 15-minute city.
Yep, right? Yep.
We all see how well that turned out.
It's always been a ghetto. As long as I've been alive, it's been the ghetto.
That's what communism and 15-minute cities and urban planning and, okay, we can go down that rabbit hole as well. A lot of it goes to zoning. Why do you think there's such a stink over the 2040 plan?
They reject single-family ownership.
Exactly. We just got that lifted in Minneapolis.
Because that's what they don't know.
That's what and they see that as bringing climate change into it. That's the nightmare right there. How greedy do you have to be to live in a 3-bedroom house with 3 kids in a front yard?
Right.
You know, but okay, how are these 4 to 6-story proletariat tin-clad housing units any better? Where's the trees, kids?
Right.
Yeah, but that doesn't enter their mind.
Sean, hi. Chris Reavers, resident tinfoil hat wearer here in Garage Logic. You said something earlier in the program, and it just made me realize something else you just said just now to Joe. What was the phrase you used, the control aspect?
Oh, managed decline?
Thank
managed
you.
Decline,
I'm starting
Chris,
to call it transformational
decline. I forgot
decline.
To write it down, but managed decline, could we also, there's a 2-part question here, could we also include the decline of education in both Minneapolis and St. Paul under that, given the fact that a lot of the people that are coming out of this are in that category of managed decline? And the second part of this question is the playbook that you have essentially diagnosed in the Twin Cities. Is it safe to assume this is the same playbook that the DFL is using all across the country?
Absolutely, and they're interconnected players. Okay, and I will say interconnected. You are right on all counts. You're it is nationwide, and it's in a couple odd places. Naturally, it's in Portland, it's in Seattle, it's in San Francisco. But now let's look at politically. And organizationally, where else it's going on. A lot of it in Virginia. If you want to look at the Somali element of it, look at Columbus, Ohio. And if you want proof of that, look on some campaign finance reports. You're going to see a lot of strange occurrences coming out of Columbus, Ohio from self-employed truck drivers at $1,000 a pop that hit the campaign finance board records within an hour of one another.
I call it the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings.
That's too easy.
Okay.
That's too easy. Right. It's much more organized than that.
All right.
So Atlanta, okay.
Yeah.
Remember Atlanta.
They got a squatter problem.
They do, but what other major political figure comes out of Atlanta?
You help.
Stacey Abrams. Right. Now, let's dial it into our front yard and the activist playground and the activist legislator playground. Who else comes out of Atlanta? Oh, Emma Greenman, 63B, House member. She came up from the Stacey Abrams campaign when it was time for Gene Wagenius to step down. Much in the same manner that Patricia Torres Ray, it was time for her to step down, right? So, and I know this about Emma Greenman because my wife's running against her this cycle.
Really?
Yes. For 63.
Okay, tell us a little bit more about Emma Greenman. Where'd she come from, Atlanta?
Atlanta, and previous to that in the Stacey Abrams campaign. And
so she didn't move to Minnesota because she fishes for walleye.
No, the DFL. That's another thing about the DFL. When they need somebody,
they just go get them, huh?
And then they ship men, get them an apartment, whatever.
It's like the Twins calling somebody up from single A.
Exactly. It's just like that. It's that organized.
Yeah, my God.
And that's just one example. And, okay, now what has Emma Greenman done for a career?
Well, I'm sure she's been an activist.
She's been a lawyer.
Well,
she's been a lawyer. And you know what her concentration in law is?
Immigration?
Elections integrity. She's the head of the civil rights voting bill going through the legislature right now. Bingo. Author. How deep do you want to go?
Keep going.
I've got it on paper. You guys can look it up.
I don't doubt you. I've satisfied my yearnings for part two of yesterday, and I feel terribly enlightened. I feel terribly pessimistic. Did the state GOP give you any help when you were running?
None whatsoever.
Is that because they're in some...
Well, because supposedly there's no hope, and I can, again, take that no hope back to not this current GOP leadership, which I think is getting way too much static, far too maligned. You try to put the mess together after the Carnahan administration.
Right.
I think David Hand's been doing a fantastic job myself. I feel a great amount of sympathy, empathy, and more for the job that guy has ahead of him because I have the similar job on a local level. And not just voter identification, but the means of that voter identification. What is that? That's data, right? And voter recognition, the individuals. One of my first steps was to go out and buy a separate data collection and management system, a CRM system, from the state party. It's independent from that, but, you know, we're the same party. We will work together. I needed to get a baseline of clean data on the resident, every resident, as much as possible in Congressional District 5. So be in coordination and conversation between the new unified Minneapolis unit, which is 55% of Congressional District 5, their chair, he and I, like, okay, what do we do? Where do we start? Well, let's start with a clean data set and now start plugging in the information. We find out who the donors are, find out who the voters are. Our data includes consumer information as well. And this allows us to now, I can train in my volunteers, give them a better understanding of political geography, identify these voters, the ones that we know are our hard base, the ones who lean Republican, and those that are identified as centrists.
Hasn't Ilhan Omar, though, done a great job for District 5? Doesn't she care deeply about Minnesota
bringing back
District 5?
Well, she said it openly herself. Her main job is to represent the interests of Somalia.
Yes.
Right? Well, and if we want to tackle that, let's look at what's going on in Somalia right now and look at this supposed willing to be conservative voting base of Somali voters. Well, that if you want to look at that geopolitically, okay, who here in Minnesota and the Somali community are proponents of Somali land as opposed to Somalia, which is a Somalian separatist movement? And that goes to control of a seaport.
That's right. Kenny?
And on that topic, what Zainab seems to be doing, at least from the few Senate file bills that I've looked for, is she's doing that on a local level where she's on at least two bills that I've seen where she's trying to appropriate funds to go to the local Somali committee, which they call the, Sean? The Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Somali Chamber of Commerce. In one case, $1.5 million. And I don't know enough about Senate files and appropriating money to know if this is common or not. Like, I don't know if our Hmong people have tried to do that or any of the other immigrants we've seen. move to our area if they've tried to do that.
I'm reasonably certain that one of the things legislators do is try to get money. I think
that's, that's your whole job. Yeah.
And a disturbing amount of money. Mm-hmm. A lot of money.
We're speaking with Sean Holston, and can you stay with us one more short break?
Oh, absolutely. I can stay as long as you have.
Well, you can't stay that long.
Welcome to the team.
I got to tell you, though, you've seen the forecast. Let's get grilling. And if you're going to grill, you got to grill with the best. Now, are you going to grill this weekend? Because you saved stuff from Easter.
In the freezer right now are the garlic horseradish brats.
From Grunhoffer's.
They'll be on the Blackstone.
Grunhoffer's Old Fashioned Meats. Check out the new store in White Bear Lake. It's on Highway 96 in Birch Lake Square. The flagship store is just north of Hugo on Highway 61. And then the second store that opened is in Forest Lake, just east of 35E on Highway 97, and now the new store in White Bear Lake.
You know, on second thought, I might not just throw them on the Blackstone. I'm going to take them out. I'm going to take a can of beer with the crock pot, let them sit in there for about maybe 5-6 hours.
Ooh.
They'll soften up, and then I'll just brown them up on the Blackstone.
Uh-huh.
I don't always like the brat that snaps. I like a nice
Sean,
soft
he's our
brat
food
too.
Guy. Yeah.
I'll let you know how it is.
And it was your double smoked ham that you had for Easter from Grunhoffer's.
Then turned into pea soup. Yep.
Brats, steaks, chops, chicken, fish, you name it. It's the best meat emporium in town, and now there's three of them. Grunhoffer's Old Fashioned Meats a mile north of Hugo. Maybe not even a mile, but it's north of Hugo on Highway 61. Forest Lake, just east of 35. If you're heading up north, get off on 97, go in a block or two. There's Grunhoffer's.
What's the southernmost?
Southernmost would be the new store in White Bear Lake on Highway 96, Birch Lake Square.
Got it. Okay.
Spencer's got a triangle there, and he's got it covered pretty well. And there's a BOGO offer. Buy a brat, get one free. It's a great way to check out the new flavors because there's about 140,000 different brat flavors, and they're all fantastic at Grunhoffer's Old Fashioned Meats.
'Garage Logic town council member. Here's what you're missing.
What are you doing?
I'm eating an apple.
What are you doing, Joe?
Trying to get people concerned here.
Well, I tried getting your attention, the fact that we went 18 minutes long. Jesus.
What's wrong with that? It's a podcast. You can do whatever you want.
No.
Oh, yes.
Get her going here.
Oh, yeah.
See, we have these things called breaks in what deals with ad insertions.
I know.
I mean, I can get you in on all the meetings if you'd like.
No.
You're good?
No.
Okay.
Go behind the scenes of Garage Logic with unfiltered audio and video access, invites to exclusive events, an emailed newsletter from the mayor himself, and more by signing up at GarageLogic.com.
Here's a man who spends hours in hardware stores sifting through the nuts and bolts of life. Joe Souchere.
So I've been bragging to everybody I meet on the service road of life here about this email I received earlier in the week from Mark from the East Side regarding his 2003 Escalade, 300,000 on it. The engine sounded like it was about to give up the ghost. So it, as a last resort, he dumped in a can of Seafoam motor treatment, and the engine now purrs, and the death rattle noises have gone. And guess what? Mark now uses Seafoam in all of his vehicles. And I love this process. It works like this so many times. You try Seafoam for the first time as a desperate last resort measure. You discover it's the real deal, and the next thing you know, you're using it as regular preventive maintenance, just part of your, you know, daily routine. It saves you time, it saves you money, and it saves you from the behind-your-back mockery that you know your favorite mechanic is going to give you. You can find this stuff, the Seafoam motor treatment, and all the other Seafoam products everywhere. It's a local company with a global reach and truly a wonderful product in a world of bad gas, Seafoam.
We've been calling it the mystery, but maybe we should call it managed decline. Could you distill that for us once again, Sean Holster?
Managed decline is managing the decline of an area for a specific purpose. You're trying to phase out a factory. You're trying to soften the blow of closing a factory, so you phase out different departments slowly. Right. So what I contend is that the business concept of managed decline is being applied on the civic level.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you are a socialist, a communist, a Maoist, and you want to politically take over, how do you then do that, winning hearts and minds, basically? Mm-hmm. So what you do is you create dependency. How do you create dependency? Well, you start letting things go to hell and you encourage it. I call this a malicious version of managed decline. It's transformational decline, transforming from the capitalist structure to the communist structure. Okay, a fine example. They decided, they figured out what they're going to do with the old burnt out O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's going in there?
I don't know.
Community center.
Okay.
That's what, 12 blocks less from the third precinct? What do they want to do with the third precinct?
Community center
and voting, move the voting operations from Minneapolis to the third precinct building, right? They want to move that from Hennepin Avenue.
Well, if this continues, we'll be unrecognizable.
Right. We'll be a city of community centers, no commerce, no industry. And then, okay, now it's, why not close off 94 and turn it into a boulevard instead of an interstate highway?
It's the easing
it's
out
it's
of...
It's a long plan.
Yeah, it's we're easing out the American dream. And along the way, the American dollar. My question is, and it's a really dark question, what is going to happen a few years down the road when the people in the outskirts around this state and around the country stand up and say, oh, hell no, you can try this in Minneapolis, but this shit isn't going to work out here. Are we in for some sort of civil type of war?
Well, I don't want to call it civil war. I don't want to be, I don't want my tinfoil on that tightly, but you're already seeing it in the managed decline of the suburbs. Right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these things that are going on, everybody likes to point a finger at Minneapolis, but a lot of these instances that we hear about in the news, they're happening in Robbinsdale. They are happening in Richfield, Bloomington, Edina even.
Burnsville.
Eden Prairie. Burnsville's particularly heavy because, well, you got a lot of drug use out there.
You do.
Right? And that's, okay, how do you manage a decline? Well, get them hooked. Get them hooked on drugs. Tell them that they really don't need to work for a living. 2020 was a great year for that because I was working in a treatment center at that point. I was making $15.50 an hour. Okay, these guys that were in there during COVID, right at the beginning anyway, remember all the incentives for not working?
Sure.
So a guy in treatment at that point, and this was not uncommon, was making about $60,000 a year in benefits by parking his butt in treatment for drugs and alcohol for 30 days. And then you go out, go on a bender, check yourself back in. It's called a Rule 25. They have to find a place for you. It's an automatic assessment, and there's plenty of ways to game that as well. Treatment center is another place for guys to just kind of hang out, wait before their prison sentences start. You can't get incarcerated. They can't touch you if you're in a treatment center.
What's next for you?
What's next for me?
Lunch.
Lunch, yes, that is a very good point. What is next for me is to continue building my organization and that organizational structure. I've been very fortunate as to have found new blood, new individuals, young blood, young individuals, not the typical GOP crabby old guy sitting around a fish house playing canasta.
Hi, I'm Kenny.
Yeah. Yeah. So... new ward chairs. I'm very excited. Our congressional candidate happens to be my Ward 3 chair in my organization. We have a new guy in Ward 7. His name is Adam Schwartzy, retired Navy SEAL, retired Marine. Mm-hmm. He ran against Dean Phillips a couple cycles ago and got himself in trouble that way with the Department of the Navy. That's another long story, and that's his story, not mine.
You're undertaking a burden that's terribly important.
I'm trying.
You're thankless.
Well, no, you're the kingpin of this. If you're going to try to revolutionize Minneapolis and get them to wake up, you've got a hell of a job.
And this is what we've been asking for years here at GL, Joe. This is what we've been asking.
Well, we found the guy.
And another part of that is, and I'm physically getting the place open myself, patching a foundation wall that was leaking, is we now have a headquarters in a secret location in the North Loop in the warehouse district.
All right.
1,000 square feet where I can train volunteers. I can do educational series. We can do speaker series. We have the capacity to put in limited broadcast abilities for the creation of media. What all this takes is money, right? And how do you get money in politics? Well, you fundraise and donations, right? So next step, now that we have a product to actually provide people a structure that we can start doing plumbing, wiring, electrical, all that politically, right? We have a central locus, a hub of operation, right? And starting a fundraising drive on three different levels, high, medium, and low. One of our low-level initiatives right now is, okay, $10, mm-hmm. right? Either one time or recurring. Less than the cost of a Big Mac meal mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, once especially a month. With the minimum wage, what it is.
Exactly. Our basic operations cost right now is $30,000 a year, mm-hmm. right? I have that financed through the next year and a half. If everyone here listening to the sound of my voice right now pitched in $10, mm-hmm. I would have my operating expenses for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. That gives us a home. That gives us data operation.
Where do you want people to contact you?
You can contact me at chair, as in chairman, at mplsgop.
Chair at mplsgop.org.
.org. Or just
post that on our website.
Yep. mplsgop.org. Just go straight to that website. Hit that donate button for $10.
Yes, Kenny.
So advice from you, if you have it, Sean. What should the people of Minnesota, greater Minnesota, the outskirts, what steps should they take to prevent the onset of a managed decline? I'm talking about county commissioners, mayors, even the representatives and senators that go to St. Paul. What steps should they take to prevent this and stop it right now?
Step one, mail in those absentee ballots. That's why we have, statistically, there are 200,000 plus absentee ballots sitting on coffee tables to this day in outstate Minnesota.
Wow.
If those had gone in, we would have a different Secretary of State, we would have a different auditor, and we would have a different Attorney General. That would have knocked Keith Ellison.
Just simple voting.
Just simple voting. Don't be afraid of the absentee ballot. No, that's one of the strategies out there right now. It's called ballot chasing, not ballot harvesting. That's where someone like me, my volunteers, and my database, we find these people. We know where they are. I can see them on a map, mm-hmm. right? I have the ability to put together a map that way. We chase them. We touch them three times, at least, between now and November, whether that's being absentee or voting in person. First time by email, second time by U.S. mail, third time by sending a volunteer to their house. There's also an election integrity component to this. There, I have started getting cooperation from the state party by, okay, who are my election judges? Where are they assigned in what precincts? How many and how do I get a hold of them? Right? And now look at that map. Where are their vacancies? Yeah, and the key to doing this is start taking ourselves seriously mm-hmm. and start participating. I one of my greatest challenges right now is psychological. And that's saying, no, you're not going to get a brick thrown through your window. No, you're not going to get harassed or physically assaulted. Is there always that chance? Yeah, there is. But on every piece of literature, it's my number. I'm pretty transparent. Anybody who wants to find me can come take a piece out of me anytime.
All right, I feel like we got a new friend in GL, so we'll stay in touch.
I would love to for that to happen.
Sean, how tall of a task is this meeting? Can it be done?
It can be done realistically. This cycle, like I said, I want candidates to run for House that are going to run the first time, knowing almost certainly they're going to lose.
But stick with it.
But stick with it. Run a second time because that allows me the resources and the time and the reason to go after those specific districts, find those voters, identify them. And if absentee voting, that is problematic in three specific precincts. Out of 137, yes, they're all on the West Bank. You look at the absentee voting statistics in just the last municipal election, absentee voting was 60% of the vote. Citywide, 17.1.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gee, that's a red flag that flies up
West
on my radar.
Huh. Wow. Interesting.
Three specific precincts.
Sean Holster, great to meet you. Great to talk to you. It's been very...
You owe him an apology.
Why?
Well, because yesterday you made me call him at your urgency.
Yeah.
And he was trying to buy cat litter in the checkout line when I contacted him. So I interrupted that process.
Whoops. Whoops. That's going to hurt the grade.
I'm not going to apologize.
Okay. He's not offended, by the way. He is not offended.
Sean, thank you. It's Minneapolis GOP. No, it's
chair.
Chair at. No, chair, MPLSGOP, chair, MPLSGOP.org. Yeah,
that's my email. Is throw the ad in there, chair at, or
why don't you let Kim give out the email address?
MPLSGOP.org. That's our primary website. That's where you can read all about us and hit that donate button.
Well, best of luck.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Somebody got something here?
Reavers does.
Cue this guy wears many Stand hats, by. Just not indoors. Joe Souchere.
Hofferman water.
Hey!
You know what I need from Hofferman after that conversation?
A drink.
Ice. For my Harmony spirits, that's what I need. You know what? An independent water treatment dealer, I've been a customer of Hofferman and Kinetico for years, and I'm very happy that I decided to make the switch. And I'm very happy that Hofferman has signed up with Garage Logic for yet another year because they are so happy that all of you GLers have scheduled your free water analysis. So thank you, thank you, thank you for doing that. And if you haven't done so yet, get on the phone right now, 612-895-2440. That's the phone number. You can also visit their website, HoffermanWater.com. A new system from Kinetico can do so many things that other water softeners just simply cannot do. It's going to cut down on your salt usage, but it's also going to protect your appliances. Bad water can affect almost every aspect of your home, so you get that new system, your showers, your laundry, your drinking water, your cooking, your ice. Everything improves, so please get in touch with my friends at Hofferman Water today. They have been serving the state of Minnesota for over 50 years. Please mention that you heard about them on the Garage Logic podcast.
As Sean Holster left, I noticed that on his belt was a tape measure. And it occurred to me that I doubt if Zayab Mohammed owns a tape measure. And that there's a striking difference there. In America, I guess I trust a guy with a tape measure on his belt as opposed to a gal who would never have any need for a tape measure.
Or, as he mentioned, can't read one.
You can't read one. It's quite amazing what's happened, and it's quite amazing what's happening. Managed decline is something I'm going to have to explore. I'm just going to have to explore it. It won't be today, but when it happens, the Precision Garage Door official opener,
yes,
is near. It's not going to be today, so
we ain't getting close to 70.
Get ready. Right? Make sure your garage door and opener is in top working condition with Precision Garage Door Service. You can book online at precisiondoormn.com or call 612-263-6985 and take care of all your garage door needs. Here is John Hite in his newsroom.
Thank you, Joe. This news brought to you by North American Banking Company. A Hennepin County deputy released from the hospital yesterday afternoon, a day after he was shot in the line of duty in Minnetonka. Law enforcement agencies from across the metro lined the entrance of HCMC, standing in solidarity with the injured deputy. Deputies, Wednesdays, when all this started, were met with gunfire while serving an arrest warrant at a home near Crestwood Drive East and Mayview Terrace. The injured deputy was one of two people hurt after executing that arrest warrant. According to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, early information shows the person at the house shot at law enforcement and they returned fire. The gunman died from his injuries at the scene. That gunman, by the way, according to reporting from the Star Tribune, was not the man law enforcement were trying to serve the warrant on.
Oh, they shot that the wrong person, guy.
Wow.
Yeah, that person's still not in custody. Another deputy was also injured as a result of the gunfire, but he was treated and released at the scene. The second injured deputy, who was released on Thursday, was rushed to the hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. The BCI is still investigating that incident.
But the wrong guy was firing at them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Refresh my memory. You might have to scan bucket me. Didn't we hear or have quotes from the dead guy's father.
That's what I was going to say.
Saying that this was suicide by cop.
Mm-hmm. He did say that, but then now today he's quoted as saying the father is they shot the wrong guy. So I, you know, the dad's all over the place, and it was a whole convoluted thing. If you haven't read the story in today's,
I tried. Yeah,
yeah, it was the house had been taken over. The father owned the house, but it had been taken over by a daughter, an estranged daughter, and she had brought in friends, and it was
sounds like a mess.
They ended up throwing some folks out of the house. Law enforcement did, and they went from there. In other news, the Minnesota housing market continues to be competitive, but March showed positive movement. New listings up 7.3%, pending sales increased 11%, according to Minnesota Realtors. Closed sales also increased by 0.5%. Jerry Tice is president of Minnesota Realtors. She said, our numbers for January and February were incredible. We hadn't seen them for quite some time, so we had a good optimistic view. March numbers are still increasing, so we're still feeling optimistic. Despite the increase in listings, Tice said the state only has about a 2-month supply of homes available. She said they would like between 4 and 6 months. Persistent low inventory means home buyers are paying 14 to 18% over the list price to get a home in the Twin Cities Metro. Higher interest rates are part of what's keeping inventory low. Montoya said owners who locked in lower rates a few years ago, they don't want to sell. At this
point. Well, yeah, it's basic economics. Yeah. But I love, the listing going up is great, but the close number is the one that matters because that's an actual transaction.
Yeah. Yeah. That one went up, what, 11?
No, you said 0.5.
That's pending. Yeah, pending sales went up 11, sorry. From the oops department.
You okay over there?
Are you wrestling a grease pig? What's going on with you?
Never mind.
It's putting up a good fight. It's putting up a good fight.
Boy, if only we had an on-off button, maybe that we could hit what we do.
I don't know how to hit that.
Really revolutionized the industry.
It really has. From the oops department, Xcel Energy initially had pinpointed the cause of a lengthy outage at its Prairie Island nuclear power plant as an equipment issue between the turbine and the electric grid. But that didn't quite tell the full story we're finding out now. Xcel workers at the plant actually had cut a bundle of power cables when drilling sideways underground last October. That interrupted power to some of the Red Wing plant's equipment and caused one of the two reactors to shut down. Xcel told federal nuclear regulators last month it did not use ground radar in an area that would have shown the cable's location. The company also said its excavation planning and oversight was inadequate, admitting to what they called procedural weakness and poor communications between departments.
Matthew, didn't you used to do endorsements for some sort of call before you dig organization?
Yeah, that was 811. Yeah. Call before you dig.
Yeah.
Go for state one call.
Right.
Where are they?
Interim Colonel Christina Bogoyevic will be the Minnesota State Patrol's new chief, the Department of Public Safety announcing yesterday. Bogoyevic, who has been with the State Patrol for more than 20 years, served as second in command since December of 2022. She joined the State Patrol in 2003. Before she was named Lieutenant Colonel, Bogoyevic served as captain of the Rochester District, mobile response commander, lieutenant in the commercial vehicle section, investigator, recruiter, and as a crash reconstruction specialist. Bogoyevic said she plans to work on efforts to lower Minnesota's traffic fatality rate. The rate is up this year compared to last year. She said she also plans to focus on ways to recruit and retain troopers. In national and international news, Israel is getting ready for a direct attack from Iran on southern or northern Israel as soon as today or tomorrow, according to a person familiar with the matter. A person briefed by the Iranian leadership, however, said that while plans to attack are being talked about, they've made no final decision on when they'll do it or where. Iran has publicly threatened to retaliate for an attack last week in Damascus, Syria, that Tehran said was an Israeli airstrike on a diplomatic building. That strike killed top Iranian military officials, including a senior member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' elite force. New poll says American citizens think, well, both former President Trump and current President Biden have hurt America, and with different reasons listed for both. For Biden, it's widespread unhappiness on two issues, the economy and immigration. Trump, meanwhile, faces an electorate where substantial shares think he harmed the country on a range of issues. This new poll is from the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research and the Associated Press. It says that more than half of U.S. adults think Biden's presidency has hurt the country on cost of living and immigration. As far as Trump's presidency goes, they say he hurt the country on voting rights, election security, relations with foreign countries, abortion laws, and climate change.
I'm sorry, Jay. Were you done?
No, but that's okay. What?
Well, Kenny Olson, what? In his brilliance, what? Created a brand new segment here in Garage Logic when he forwarded me a video. Because no one, and I repeat, no one, can break down this presidential debate quite like The View. And I hear this new segment with, how long can the mayor listen? Here we go.
You guys know I want Trump to lose. I'm not a Biden supporter, but what I hear when I talk to undecideds is the grocery bills are.
Yes, but who? People knew.
Yeah, I'm about 11 seconds.
I had 12 and a half. I can't take it.
It goes on for 90 seconds with them bickering like
How
this.
How long did you last?
I lasted 39 seconds.
Well, you are a sap.
You know what it reminded me of? Remember the line Royce used to have for Sports Talk? Or maybe it was Joe. A show in which everyone has their own topic.
Yeah.
That's, although, they're not as entertaining as we were.
Oh, they are just a caterwauling group of sea hags.
And every one of them are wrong about everything.
God.
Bold-faced wrong.
Kenny lasted the longest because he thought maybe after 39 seconds they were going to kiss and make up.
No, not these hags.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Record straight.
So who are you going to vote for?
So I've been reading today about Trump.
I don't think John's done, but go ahead.
Trump's possible choice of VP. Do you think if he picks a good VP that will sway the voters enough to...
I don't.
Right. Who would be dumb enough to ride on that ticket?
I don't. The name I read about is this governor of Virginia, who seems to have his ass together.
Huh.
Anyway,
You know what I have? Maybe we'll do it after John.
What's that? John?
I've got the targets in Minnesota that would be selected in the event of a nuclear attack. So, you know what? Okay. I might be able to just send you off into the weekend. Wondering if you're going to get blown up or not.
I hate to break it to you, but John and Kenny and Don McLean did this topic about 2 years ago.
Yeah, but nobody heard it, so we'll do it.
There's no disputing that.
The truth can't be controversial, Kenny.
Two things can be true at the same time.
Things have changed since then, too, because if that happened, I said I was going to sit on my porch and drink beer and just wait for
it
to
kill
me.
So will I.
But now, I
will. That's what I will do.
I can have a beer, too.
Yes, then. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what's that term? Because you have break glass smoke Luckies.
Crack one open.
Run to Yarmo's, buy beer.
Nuclear bomb, crack Jameson.
Right.
In other news, the House voted to renew just about an hour ago, voted to renew that surveillance program that they've been talking about for several days, 2 days after a band of 19 conservative privacy hawks revolted against Republican leadership and blocked the legislation on the floor when their demands were not met. The vote today, though, is 273 to 147, overwhelmingly bipartisan, both Republicans and Democrats voting in favor of the legislation. Of those who supported the legislation, 126 were Republicans, 147 Democrats. It followed a dramatic vote earlier this morning to narrowly reject an amendment that would have required a warrant for surveillance in more situations. The conservative folks ended their blockade this morning, allowed the bill to move forward after striking a deal with Speaker Mike Johnson and his team. Under the agreement, the reauthorization period of spy powers, known as Section 702 of the FISA Act, would be cut to 2 years from the original proposed 5 years. Balding is kind of mean. I don't know. Balding fugitive in Great Britain is upset that police told everyone they were looking for a man with a receding hairline.
So the fugitive of a crime is upset.
That's correct. In Great Britain.
Yeah.
I think he's having a bit of a laugh, as Rook would say.
You're having a laugh.
Daniel Kelloway told Avon and Somerset police that there was
No need to mention his hairline after the force appealed to the public for his whereabouts. He was described as a 29-year-old white male, about 5'9", average build, brown eyes, receding brown hair, and facial hair. Kellaway replied, apparently in an email, "Not liking the service, I'm heading to Turkey to get it all sorted out. We'll catch up." He's wanted over several ongoing investigations relating to driving offenses, criminal damage, and threatening behavior. Kellaway, though, now has fans on social media. He even commented again, asking for police to amend his age after his birthday had passed. Retired Detective Mick Neville, this is my favorite part of the story, said, "I have no doubt police will be combing the area looking for him."
Oh, see, you can't do that to a baldy guy. That's just mean.
Combing the area. Give me a break.
Get it?
No, it's dumb.
Okay. I love these stories, so you guys are going to have to suffer with me as I read it. Archaeologists working at the ancient site of Pompeii unveiled their latest find yesterday. Oh, did you see this?
I love what? This. No, what?
So cool. A formal dining room that offers a glimpse of how some of the wealthier denizens lived, or at least the art that they looked at while they ate.
Yeah.
Painted dark black so that soot from candle smoke wouldn't stain them. The walls are divided into panels, and they're gigantic walls. Yes. It almost looks like a tunnel. Gigantic walls. Several of them are decorated with couples who are associated with the Trojan War. The dining room is part of an insula, the equivalent of a city block, that's been excavated in connection with a project to shore up the perimeter between the excavated and unexcavated areas of the city, part of which remain underground. Gabriel Zook Trigel is the director of the archaeological park at Pompeii, said in a news release, "People would meet to dine after sunset. The flickering light of the lamps had the effect of making the images appear to move, especially after a few glasses of good wine."
Sure. Hmm.
The mythological couples provided ideas for conversations about past and life. The couples included Helen of Troy and Paris, who's identified in the scene with the Greek inscription by his other name, Alexandros, while a panel on the same wall shows Helen's parents, Leda, queen of Sparta, and Zeus, depicted as the swan who seduced her.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What's your problem, Such?
Nothing. Well, why is it great?
What's the source here, John? I'm going to look this up because this isn't
it's everywhere.
Great.
It's okay, everywhere. You can
just Google it.
If you put Pompeii in your search engine, it'll pop up.
Cool. Right. Thank you.
And they didn't get destroyed in the earthquake.
Well,
they got covered.
And
maybe open a history book every now and then. So
now they're chipping away at her, huh?
John, thank you.
I'm going to learn from history, you know.
So am I done, or do I read more?
Sure.
Done now?
Keep going.
Go ahead. Do one more.
Ask two questions. You answer with sure. Come on.
Yes.
If you'd like to hear, how's this for lawyers?
Alan
Dershowitz's comments after the death of O.J. Simpson yesterday. Alan offered his sincerest condolences to the families of Simpson's alleged victims and then said he would have represented them instead of Simpson if they had called me first.
Huh.
During an appearance on Fox News' Hannity following news of Simpson's death, Dershowitz said, "I want to send my sincerest condolences to the Goldman family and the Brown family." Dershowitz has defended a lot of public figures who weren't too popular, including Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein. And Simpson was acquitted of murder in 1995. One of his lawyers was Dershowitz. The others, Robert Kardashian, Robert Shapiro, and Johnny Cochran. During his show on Thursday, News Nation host Dan Abrams, who worked as a courtroom reporter during the Simpson trial, said the majority of Simpson's defense team did not believe that Simpson was innocent. In fact, he said Cochran made it clear in private conversations that he knew Simpson had killed Brown.
So who's alive? F. Lee Bailey is dead. Is Shapiro dead?
I don't know, but do you know the White House expressed condolences of O.J. Simpson's death with no mention of the murder victims?
No.
I think that's just tragic.
Yeah.
That's tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
According to the New York Post, White House expresses condolences on O.J. Simpson's death with no mention of the murder victims. And Jordy's wanting to know, well, A, why'd they even bring it up at all? And B, are they going to lower the flags to half staff?
Wow.
Dave Chappelle did a funny bit on that.
Yes, he did.
Oof.
And the fourth time I met OJ.
Shapiro was still alive. He's 81.
Really?
Yep.
And Kardashian. He's
Well, gone. I met OJ and his, well, I don't know how to say it, his soon-to-be deceased wife.
It's nine minutes, too, because I think you must have watched the same clip I did.
I did.
It's,
God.
He is really funny.
He is something else.
But the best was, well, I'll just say it. The best was the part where he says it was me and Chris Tucker were both out of work, you know, because we got canceled and all. And he said, OJ wanted a picture, and Chris Tucker and I looked at each other and went, nah, bro, we're good. Like, are you out of your mind? We haven't had work in months. The last thing we're going to do is take a picture of you, you idiot.
Well, your White House has it covered.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Yes.
Say, if you're thinking about relocating your business or expanding it, you might want to consider Sioux Falls for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is a better tax climate. South Dakota is the second best tax climate in the nation. Minnesota's the 45th worst tax climate in the nation. That's just one reason. You can increase profits in Sioux Falls. You can get safer streets, award-winning schools, short commutes, a vibrant, growing downtown, a pro-business attitude, and people who want to work. You can find all this out at SiouxFallsDevelopment.com. That's one word, SiouxFallsDevelopment.com. But let your business grow. I'll miss you, but I certainly wouldn't blame you if you want to escape the high taxes of Minnesota, where we have planned, what's the term?
Managed decline.
Maybe you want to escape the managed decline, not to mention the high taxes. Maybe 2024 is your time to make your move to Sioux Falls. Check out everything you need to know. It's one word, Sioux Falls Development.
All right, everybody, it's the Body. I'm here on a Friday afternoon, Fun Friday in Garage Logic, here to announce that I will be in studio on Wednesday. That's going to be April 17th. It'll be high noon. Be ready for the showdown.
Are you really going to be here Wednesday?
I don't know. Got to tune in to find out. Why don't you tell me?
He is going to be here Wednesday. Yes.
Join us.
He is going to be here Wednesday, 17th.
How long was the phone conversation to set up said interview?
Well, it was with Tyrell, so I didn't. Oh. Had it been with the governor, he would have had me on there for 25 minutes. I don't listen to the show, but the other day you were talking about the politics of the USA.
Well, the other,
can I do some?
The
work
last
here?
Time in May here, I? It was 28 minutes just in this room.
I ain't leaving. You know, Joe, what do you got to say? It's your show.
I want to say that I'm not going to say this guy's name because I want to protect his wife. Hail the Flashlight King!
Hail you!
You know,
the wife was physically sick to her stomach this morning as she headed out the door to serve another day as a middle school teacher. She said the school was having a day of silence in support of the LGBTQWTF students in the school. Apparently, students and teachers are not supposed to talk the entire day as a way to show support for those students. I asked her how many of those students are actually in the school. She replied, a handful in a school of 800 students. What infuriates me beyond comprehension is the use of tax dollars to support this when many of these kids can't even read or write at a third grade level, let alone do math. As you often say, this used to be a hell of a country. Sadly, it is gone, and I do not believe our side will ever regain control. Well, Sean Holston thinks we have a chance. Well, why would you have a day of silence? That's not learning. You kids aren't special. You've made that decision. Okay. Now shut up and do your homework.
Right. Let's go. Learn how to read.
Hell? Listen to this now. They couldn't ban gas-powered mowers last season, so Plan B is in effect. This is from a very trustworthy mole. Use taxpayer dollars to give grants to people who buy electric lawnmowers. Minnesota grants for electric lawn and snow removal equipment. Senate file 4969, House file 5056. Senator Jen McEwen from Duluth. She's been in our sights before. wants to establish a lawn and snow removal equipment electrification grant program. The bill was heard this week in the Senate Environment, Climate, and Legacy Committee and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The program would be developed by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and would prioritize grants for small businesses and individuals to purchase electric lawn and snow removal equipment. Additionally, the MPCA would provide education to K-12 schools on the need for electrification. The legislation appropriates, you ready?
Yeah.
$3.5 million this year with the funding available in 2030. Ironically, Senator McEwen is a strong opponent to copper nickel mining. She wants taxpayers to give you a grant to get an electric, battery-powered mower, but does not want Minnesota Minerals mined to make these batteries. Is that managed decline or Sensum's razor or just her continued incompetence? Why should I have to pay for my neighbor to get an electric snowblower? Why should I have to pay for my neighbor to buy an electric car?
You shouldn't have to.
Would if you had compassion for your
fellow
man.
I don't have any.
Right.
Same program in effect for bicycles, too, by the way.
It just doesn't, the word, it doesn't add up.
The CEO of Solyndra, a California-based solar energy company, that received a $535 million loan guarantee from the Obama administration, has resigned. In papers filed with the bankruptcy court Wednesday, Solyndra said that Brian Harris had left his post on Friday, October 7, as contemplated even before these cases were commenced. Solyndra shut its doors and declared bankruptcy 6 weeks ago. The guy got a lot of money. Solyndra was going to make renewable energy. They received a $25 million tax break from California's Alternative Energy and Advanced Transportation Financing Authority. It all went to pot. It turned out to be a $528 million loss for Solyndra. Okay, what? What is wrong with both of you? What is wrong?
I just realized something.
What happened?
What in the hell?
What are you doing?
The problem is, he listened to you.
Yeah.
Meaning yesterday, when he came in here, you told him and you gave him specific instructions. Sit down, shut up, don't do anything stupid, I'm going to get heavy. Which you also did at the beginning of today's
show. There's a bunny in the studio.
So now he's getting it out of his system.
He just got caught.
What are you doing?
That was a great story. Could you read that one over again? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm pent up, man. You kept me capped for 2 days. I won't be silenced.
And the Biden administration has approved a new bailout plan for college.
There it is.
On the same day, I had to go to savings to get money to pay my first quarter taxes. Something ain't right here.
Well, it's just what Sean said. They're driving away all of the people that... But the thing I guess I didn't even realize about what he said, because your question was always, well, what's in it for them? Well, if they chase away the local tax dollar, who cares? Because they're just going to chase it federally then when all that tax
but
base...
But who's going to produce?
Federally, you still will. It doesn't matter where you live.
No. Who's going to produce the money? What incentive do I have to keep working? If it's all going to be taken,
aside from pride,
you won't.
I mean,
and the dark answer is you won't have a choice. You'll have to work, and your entire salary will go to the betterment of the country, and they will mete out whatever financials you need to put potatoes on your plate.
It'll be forced. You'll be gas lit.
What was the gal's name? Forced to step down. She wasn't left enough.
That's Patricia why something.
Yeah.
Garcia.
Yeah. Ray, the phrase of the day, though, managed decline. Oof. It's an interesting research if GLers want to follow that rabbit hole.
There's a couple of spots in the Twin Cities that would be targeted by a nuke, so We'll see.
Anything close to Hubbard?
Duluth, Fargo, you know, stuff around there.
Okay.
Who cares?
Do we get a heads up?
I don't think so.
The question is, which way is the wind blowing that day?
Yeah.
And how is your prep been? If you're good in the prep department, you might survive. Do you want to survive? That's the question.
Not really. Not if the world's decimated. What's the point? You got all these rich people building these bunkers and stuff to come up and watch what? A prairie chicken looking at the
right
weeds?
So, just to be clear here in the final moments of GL, all the fun that we just had in the last 3-4 minutes was all just kind of shat upon by this topic.
I know. What, the nukes?
Yeah.
Oh.
He sent us home depressed.
Renewal by Anderson brings you only because. Only because they come to us all the way from Apache Junction. Boy, when the Lymans go to visit you, they stay a while, don't right. they?
Yeah, they ain't going anywhere.
You start looking at your watch.
Right. On this
it's
day.
It's getting dark out there.
April 12th.
In 1923, St. Paul's first automatic traffic signal.
We had nothing before 1923 in this date.
What do you mean?
Like in 1865, 18, it starts at 1923.
Well, that's this day in history.
That's what I'm saying. Usually, there's no other important dates prior to 1923.
No.
Joe, was it the arms? Me. The green arm that said go and the red arm that said stop?
Or was it actual? It was on a pedestal about 10 feet high,
yeah.
And it began operating at 5th and St. Peter Streets in St. Paul. It was probably the arm that came down.
Yeah, cool. That'd be fun.
On this day,
412,
in 1937, Dennis Banks was born on the Leech Lake Indian Reservation of the Ojibwe. An activist for indigenous rights, he was one of the founders of the American Indian Movement in 1968, along with Clyde and Vern Bellecourt, White Earth Ojibwe, and George Mitchell. Intent on raising awareness of the plight of Native people, the members of AIM participated in the occupation of Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, Wounded Knee in South Dakota, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs headquarters in Washington, D.C. For these activities, Banks spent time in prison, after which he continued his activist work. On this day,
April 12th, Joe,
in 1976, a two-month strike by members of the Graphic Arts International Union was settled when several hundred bookbinders and four Twin Cities area envelope companies reached an accord about a new two-year contract. The agreement provided hourly pay increases of 45 cents the first year and 50 cents the second year. The strikers had settled earlier with a fifth company. I don't understand why that made... That's not important
it's
enough
not that
to be
big
this
of a deal.
Day in history.
Yeah, I'm not into that one.
And finally, sports related.
Yeah.
Okay.
On this day...
You're talking about April 12th. My guess is it's baseball related.
In 2010.
Target Field opened.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, technically, they played an exhibition game before that. The first regular season game took place where young Angela, myself, and Melly got super loaded in Section 113. It was fantastic.
Were the trees up at that point?
We were all there.
Right, but you guys didn't stick around.
The Minnesota Twins played their first regular season game at their new stadium, Target Field. Who'd they beat?
They beat the Boston Red Sox. It was a 75-degree day. I was in heaven.
And Pete Rose got the first hit inside Target Field.
Nope, that was the Metrodome.
Okay. No, but Jason Kubel hit the first home run.
That was a 5-2 victory in front of nearly 40,000.
God, that was a
fun
day. And
Jason Kubel's parents were what occupation?
Shepherds.
No. Come on.
Oh, that's right. That's
musicians.
Musicians.
I remember you asking him that. That was a fun day.
Were we in the dump for that?
Yeah, that was at the Dome.
We were in the Metrodome for that day.
Yeah.
For the Target Field day?
No,
for the Twins Fest.
Twins Fest.
I got him.
Got him.
Thank you, Gieler.
Wait.
Okay.
Wait.
But wait, there's more.
Wait. As long as Pat...
No, don't pull any other shit out.
No, as long as Pat isn't here. We were talking about baseball seasons the other day, probably on Monday. I can't remember the context, but MJ wants me to note, the next time Patrick says it was ridiculous for baseball to go from a 154 to 162 game schedule, tell him it was simply math. When there were only 8 teams in each league, you needed a 154-game schedule to play every other team an equal number of times.
Okay.
Each team had 7 other teams to play, so they each played each other 22 times. When the leagues expanded to 10 teams, each team had 9 other teams to play. 162 divided by 9 is 18. They each played each other 18 times. I picked the San Francisco Giants because they're a West Coast team and looked at their 1965 schedule. Things were so different then. The Giants went on the road Monday, August 23rd, and did not return home until September 8th.
Oh, my God.
They played 5 different teams on the road trip, starting with a 5-game series against the Pirates and including a 4-game series with the Phillies, an 18-game road trip in all lasting over 2 weeks. Amazing by today's standards.
Okay, so that trip started against who?
Hey, let's not prolong it.
Started against the Pirates.
What I says to the Pirates?
Oh,
you got me right now.
Come on, Giants.
But I got you.
Speaking
thank you, GLers.
Speaking of Target Field, GLers, do not wait. The town council. Target Field takeover is already 61% claimed.
Really?
That's an odd number to include in a promo, but that's okay. That's the number we got right now. We are headed back for that Target Field takeover Thursday, May 9th, to play a little hooky. You can join the entire crew, some cabinet members, as we take over Target Field when Minnesota takes on Seattle. Thursday, May 9th, it's the Town Council Target Field takeover. Tickets are free for Town Council members on a first-come, first-served basis, and 39% remain. Claim yours right now at GarageLogic.com. Not a Town Council member? Not a problem. Just join the council today and claim your tickets. Learn more and claim your tickets right now at GarageLogic.com.
Looks like Tiger will make the cut. He's hanging in there at +1 through about 11 or 12 holes.
You predict a big comeback?
No.